closer.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to the Pre-Accident Podcast. I am your host for today, Todd Conklin is my name, and thanks for tuning in, or whatever it is you do when you listen to podcasts, downloading, or subscribing, sitting at your computer, driving in your car, jogging with your little headphones on, whatever it is you're doing, thanks for doing it, dang it, I'm so happy you did it. Today's going to be a big day, so be ready, they're all pretty big. This one I'm excited about because we're going to start talking a little bit more about big data and prediction and this whole idea of leading indicators, lagging indicators, metrics, measurements. It is such a big deal for everyone. I spend so much of my time talking about metric. What is it? How do I measure? Well, that's what we want to talk about. We want to pull the string. The week's been crazy for me. I don't know how you guys are, but spring is here, so that's nice. I mean, the weather's good. And flying's a little tiny bit more reliable. Now, instead of not flying through Chicago because of one flake of snow will close the airport, now you have to not fly through Chicago because one thunderstorm will close the airport. But nonetheless, it's still the same problem. And I'm just busier than crap. For everyone who I owe a phone call to, I'm sorry. I promise you, I try to call everybody back. I really do. It works really brilliantly when it happens, but holy crap, I'm just busy and so are you, so we're all busy together. Big week, lots of excitement, lots of travel. I'm going to head off to Asia for a while and do some work there. Got a bunch of slides translated into Thai, so now I don't really know what the slides say. I don't really know what the slides say anyway, but now I really don't know what the slides say, so now I'm even better. So let's start the podcast by introducing you to our guest today, who's just a great guy. You're going to like him a lot, actually. His name is Chuck Pettinger, but his friends all call him Dr. Chuck. And Chuck's got a PhD. He's a safety guy. He's a hardcore safety guy. And he's from an organization, a company called Predictive Solutions. I've known Chuck for years and years and years. It's always such a pleasure to work with him. He's just a smart cat. I mean, he's just a smart guy. He studied with Geller, so he comes from sort of the behavioral-based side of the house, but he didn't stop there. In fact, he really has expanded tremendously, but he's a researcher, so he's kind of the green eye shade type of person. He's very fixated in metrics, and metrics are really, really important to him. And so he's a really good person to talk to. But mostly, he's just a super good guy. And he's very attainable. You can pick him up or call him. You can email him. He's always interested in having conversations. And I think you're going to really like Chuck. So without any further ado, and with as much fanfare as I can muster up on this fine spring-like day, please listen carefully to Chuck Pettinger. You're going to like him. Here's Chuck.
No, certainly not.
Or maybe the most interesting. How have you been, buddy?
I've been really good. Traveling as usual, going around, giving lots of talks. I'm doing 13 conferences this year, which is just crazy.
That's a ton. That's crazy. That's a million.
Yeah, as well as, my normal gig.
Which is being the greatest guy on earth.
Well, no, you got that taken care of.
No. Hey, thanks for doing this podcast. It's super fun to talk to you. And you've been on my list, so I was really excited when you accepted.
Oh, man. You know what? You have so many awesome people on your, podcast now. I feel honored. Oh. And I'm, coming right before Decker.
Oh, I know. There's all these great people. So, I mean, it's really fun.
There's some people that I never, ever heard of. So the guys from COS, ORCHSE, Stephen D.
Yeah, ORC, they're cool.
Yeah.
They're
awesome
cool
stuff.
How'd you like Jim Barker and his discussion on complexity?
I found it very complex.
I liked it very much.
No, I thought it was awesome. You know what? I like it because I mean, you and I have always talked about cultures are very fluid. And I was thinking about this today. I was outside using my chainsaw, and I said, huh, well, I hope I don't cut off anything. That would make a great podcast. But I was thinking, when was the first time I met you? And it must have been when we were at Los Alamos, and I was doing a behavior-based safety training, and I was generically talking about culture, and you called me out.
Oh, I did? Oh, what a jerk I was.
I mean, you were like, I think what you really mean is not culture, but what you really mean is, you know, so you were going on and on, but it's a great memory. But you're right. I mean, you called me out, and it's not culture, it's climate, but, you know.
So what are you thinking about now? What's on your mind now? I read those articles you sent me. Those were great. You're kind of famous in Newsweek and all.
Well, yeah, I was like two sentences in Newsweek. But, you know, this big data stuff is really taken off. And I'm not as much as excited about the data aspect as I am about some of the futures that we're getting into with the technology of where it's at. So, for instance, the all the wearables. You know, where not only that, but the when you can get the wisdom of the crowds going. So, for instance, you know, I've been trying to get people to use their data. So you collect data via apps and handhelds. And what I really want is I want real-time access to climate or, you know, culture as it's referred to most often, right?
Tell everyone what you do. Talk about what you do, because that would be an interesting starting.
Sure. Well, I would say that I'm a process change consultant with a safety slant and data geek. So what I do is I go out and I help organizations redesign what they do for safety, collect interesting information, and then we have a data scientist that puts this information into a model through artificial intelligence, and we predict injuries. So that's kind of the long and the short of it.
How effective are you?
In predicting injuries?
Yeah.
80 to 90%. Now I know you're thinking, you know, mystical eight ball, you know, voodoo witch doctor type of stuff, but actually this big data and data analytics is an untapped region for safety.
Yeah.
And we're lucky to get people to count, you know, injuries and near miss.
Yeah, I agree. Okay.
And they feel good if they're counting near misses. But the thing is that people don't use their data. And that's the frustrating thing. That's the thing that keeps me going, is there's so much observation intelligence out there that is not being used. Or if it's being used like you often say, to punish and shame someone into complying, which we know it's the system.
Why do you think they're not using their data?
Well, for one, they get into this this venomous cycle, right? You ask these supervisors who don't have any extra time to go out and do a safety observation. They do a safety observation. They put important stuff on there. They turn it in. It gets ignored, gets put in a black hole. Nobody ever talks about it. So the next time they go out, they're not quite as motivated. And then eventually you get pencil whipping. You get this venomous cycle going on. So the leadership or the safety team or whoever's looking at the data looks at it and says, really? Do I trust this data? So they don't trust the data, thus they don't use it, and it's this venomous cycle. So what we have to do is turn that into a value proposition for people, because if you make it valuable to the person that's going out there and doing it, they're going to want to do it more, right? Because you're helping them. And it's not necessarily predicting this employee is going to have this injury. What I think it does is identifies areas within our culture or our systems that needs our attention. And we can do that, right? A safety professional can sit down and look at this data and come up with a Pareto chart. But when you have a large corporation or when you have a complex system, trying to capture that and make sense of it is absolutely not possible through our brain. That's why you need computer models. And the computer models that we use are based on ones that we started developing with Carnegie Mellon. I don't know if you know those guys up in the artificial intelligence, big brain, Carnegie Mellon school.
Pretty sick and smart. Are you using agency based modeling or because I just interviewed a guy who's an expert on an agency based modeling, and he was talking about, you know, the ability to use these predictive models, these agency based predictive models, to determine like when a physician will write a prescription for a drug with remarkable success. It's crazy.
Yeah, I mean, there is this. They have different applications. So let me kind of back up. The guys at Carnegie Mellon helped IBM create a chess program that beat Kasparov. You're probably too young to remember that, but
I am just a baby. Yes, I am a tiny baby.
And then they recently created another computer program called Watson that beat the best Jeopardy players. Now, you can Google that and watch some YouTube things. It's pretty hysterical, some of the responses, but nonetheless, that same Watson is the one that helped us create our model. It helped surgeons create a model that when they see these types of symptoms, here's a list of your things and here's a list of recent articles that could help you, you know, diagnose this better, as well as predictive policing. They've used these models to help predict where the next, you know, domestic disturbance is going to be based on data. And You know, I always talk about the books that we're currently reading. And I don't know if you've read The Signal and the Noise.
I have, yeah.
By Nate Silver.
Yeah, I have.
But I think the title of it, it's called The Signal and the Noise, you know, why so many predictions fail but some don't. But one paragraph, one sentence in there really, I think, relates to safety. He says, let me see if I can get this right, when catastrophe strikes, we look for a signal in the noise, anything that might explain the chaos that we see all around us and bring order to the world again. I mean, safety is noisy. And if we can identify a signal before we even have near misses, close calls, whatever you want to refer to it, that helps us identify you know, some of those latent things in our processes that need to be fixed. You know, we're going to be that closer to sending people home, never getting hurt.
Which is remarkable. And one of the things I think about, and I talk about this a bunch with people, is that those signals really can only be heard in successful work. So one of the paradigms we have to shift, and I'm really excited you're out there doing it, is we've got to get people to stop sort of sitting around and waiting for an accident to happen to determine what they need to fix next. They've got to think earlier in the game.
Yeah, it's so exciting. And like I said earlier with wearables, you know, they have Fitbits and all these other trackers that can track your heart rate, your O2 levels, the heat index. Just imagine the impact we can have on construction. I mean, you can pair your tracker with your fall protection. So if you were to be, you know, elevated without that fall protection paired, it would send an alert. And maybe just a vibration on your wrist that says, hey, you might want to get your fall protection. You forgot it. You know, those types of things, I think, will, you know, get us to that next level. You know, you talk about the new way of thinking, or what is the phrase you use? Not the new way of thinking, but
the new view. The new view is what I call it.
Yeah, it's the new view, but it's even better than the new view. It's like the Renaissance.
Oh, yeah. No, somebody said that when I interviewed him, and I've decided we're all Renaissance men.
Unless, I like that.
Unless
like
we want to be really snooty, and then we'd be Renaissance men.
So you and I are on the same path. You know, I'm trying to give these people a different way, a new view of using their data and their analytics and their observation intelligence, such that they can turn it around and make a difference in people's lives.
Do people not know what to measure? Is that a part of the challenge? Is that they, you know, the article you sent me where you talk about sort of the tragic absence of a null set, it is pretty complicated. I mean, people really want to know what it is we should measure. And one of the things about Barker's podcast from earlier was when you talked about the fact that you don't measure chaos in a fixed point, you measure motion, you measure the way it moves. And I think that's really interesting, but that makes metrics really hard.
It does. And that's the challenge. A lot of people, because I, you know, I give workshops on leading indicators, they said, Chuck, just send me your leading indicators. Just give me them. I said, well, that's not possible because every organization is completely different where you are in your cultural journey, what you're looking at. So what they have to do is you have to teach people to read the story that's coming from your data. And then by doing that, you come up with your own leading indicators. And by identifying those, you can go out and test them. You know, I'm a researcher at heart. I love this safety stuff, but even better when I can take the safety stuff and get people to be engaged in safety. Another book that I'm just recently picked up again. I don't know if you read any of the lateral thinking stuff.
No,
De Bono.
I know De Bono pretty well, but tell me more.
So, trying to get people to get outside of that comfort zone, and you and I have worked with the same client, and I tried the hat exercise with them, and it was a lot of fun. And if people don't know what the different thinking hats are, just look up De Bono and try to picture a bunch of engineers putting on different hats. It was hysterical. But what I'm trying to do is get people to think outside of normal things. So, for instance, we can track all the compliance, the rules, regulations, policies, procedures. We can track behavior. But sometimes what I want to track is something that is not, that is very trackable, like leadership engagement. So, for instance, this one company that I just worked with, instead of having a CFO or COO go out and do a compliance audit, what I did is I said, I want you to go out and do a crew visit, right? So, and here's the four questions I want you to ask. And I want you to take a giant checklist with you. I just want you to ask these four questions. Go up to a crew guy and say, hey, what are you working on today? Well, you know, introduce yourself first. Yeah. First question, hey, what are you working on today? Wow, what's the worst thing that can happen? What are you doing to prevent that? And what can I do to help? So what I do is I get these C-suite people to track their conversations, write down some comments that they've had, and take that information and share it back to the organization. And by doing that, it creates, you know, a little bit of accountability, a little bit of internal goals, you know. Nobody wants to be the last in the C-suite, and you really get some interesting behavior out of that.
And
in turn, we can take
elegant,
that and turn it into intelligence.
They're super elegant questions too. They're easy, they're meaningful, they're thought provoking, they're forward looking. That's cool, and I like the idea of peer pressure among the senior leaders.
Yeah, you know, I had the CFO come up to me in this organization. This was a big utility, and he's like, you know, Chuck, I'm uncomfortable going out there. I don't know the first thing about, you know, what these linemen do. And I said, well, I don't want you to go out there, and I want you to talk to them, you know, and having that conversation, which if you're at that level in an organization, you're pretty good at having conversations with people. And all you really got to do is throw that stuff out there, and the employees will talk because they're competent and they want to show how competent they are. And especially with safety, these guys live and breathe safety because if they make a mistake, it could be their last, right? So they take safety very seriously. And, you know, the CFO came back, you know, a few months later, and I was in a meeting with him. And he's like, wow, you wouldn't believe what these guys have to go through. I'm like, yeah, right? So anyway, that's the data. The things that we measure can be anything. And the good thing about this predictive model is that we look at hundreds of things. You know, we have 160 million observations in our data set, and we have dozens and dozens of different indicators. And really based on, you know, what other people are saying or recording, it helps us improve our model. So it's really fascinating when you think about what people do with that data and the potential impact we can have on people's lives.
Do you see that data moving? Do you see it moving away from just solely behavioral observation data to more condition observation data?
Well, you know, I've long been a proponent of doing both. you know, there is some value to the behavioral ones, because if somebody's doing something risky, and this is a lot of things that people get wrong about behavior-based safety, you know, they teach that if you see someone doing something risky, the first question should be, why did that make sense given the circumstances surrounding them? You know, risky behavior is a symptom of something that is deeper within the culture or the system that is allowing that behavior to occur. So much like housekeeping, right? There had to be some behavior that led to that lack of housekeeping or good housekeeping. So it's not just, do we do behavior or do we do compliance? We do what we think is going to give us the best picture of our current culture and help us predict, you know, where we might want to focus our attention. So we might switch up these checklists weekly or even daily. So, I mean, I'm currently working with clients on trying to identify those serious injury fatality precursors, which I know you would argue to say that they're everywhere. They're constant.
Yes, I would. But I would absolutely have that argument. Yes. And yes, if you find when you find the precursor to a fatality, will you call me no matter what time it is? I need to know that.
Yeah, but it's not that we're ever going to find it. But what it does, it gives people a chance to reflect back on their data and say, all right, in the look ahead that we have next week, what are some out of the ordinary, risky things that we're going to be occurring? What are some very common things that we do all the time? Where haven't we observed in a while? What are some risky things that people saw last week? So really, it's using the information and turning it into something that's valuable to the people to participate. Because you can't, once you're a good observer, you can't turn it off, right? You don't need a checklist to go out and do an observation. And what it does, it opens up the conversation. And again, it becomes a learning organization. I know that's an overused phrase, but you know, everybody's interested now in these precursors.
Oh yeah, because it's predictive, and they're seductive. They're so attractive to us. Do you guys do much post-job learning? I mean, do you do much data collection on post-job learning? Do you talk about post-job learning?
Yeah, well, it's not how you talk about it, like incident investigation type of stuff. But what I try to do is, you know how you have pre-job briefs? I try to get people to do post-job briefs. So when you reflect back on your day, what didn't go as planned and how did you compensate for that? And then we track those types of things. And just doing those post-job briefs, in some instances, just the activity reflects a more positive culture.
Do you get pretty good traction on that? I mean, do you get people to do it?
Yeah, but here's the difficult thing, right? It's the end of the day. You know, it's hard enough to get them to do it at the beginning of the day, but it's the end of the day and we need to get going. But, you know, people start to see the value in it when we can turn around and say, all right, so tomorrow when you're up here on floor 8 and the elevator guy is in your workspace because he's behind, you know, we can talk to the general contractor and get things moved around or, you know, work on that scheduling. So, again, when you do these pre-job briefs, I believe they're idealistic. You know, this is how the perfect plan is going to go, right? Here's what we need to think about. Here's some safety things. Get out there and get the job done. But during the day, we make shifts. And there are organizations out there that, you know, whenever something dramatically changes, they have another pre-job brief, or they carry around a, you know, a folder that has different pages for them to do. But, you know, I really like the idea of understanding what didn't go as planned so we can see where in our systems we kind of didn't identify that.
Have you tried building those into the pre-job brief? So, you know, you start your day with a post-job brief of yesterday. Have they tried that?
Yeah, and that's what they generally do. I mean, honestly, they have the pre-job brief, and then at the end of the day, everyone has to sign off on it, and then they ask if they've done anything or what didn't go as planned. So that's how the companies that have used this have incorporated into their current system. But we're still working on it, working on the reliability and consistency of it.
Oh, yeah. I think we'll never be done with that. That's a never-ending quest. It's a remarkable challenge. And you're keeping busy, yeah?
Yeah, it's great.
What are you thinking? What are you reading? What's the future hold? I know you're looking at big data. Have you read, I think it's called Dataclism? I'm reading it now. It's a really, really interesting cut on big data and how big data can really predictively understand and probably knows more about us than we even horrifically think they know about us.
Yeah. No, I haven't heard of that. I'll have to look that up. Predictive analytics came out a couple of years ago by Eric Siegel. That's a really good one. And, you know, I've been looking a lot at innovation because what I find is that safety is not very innovative, and trying to create innovation in processes and systems and to get people to think differently. There's a great one on there about Pixar and the history of Pixar.
Oh, yeah.
And how they get people to be creative. It's more of a story than really a lot of meat, but nonetheless, how do we keep that creativity going? You know, that sense of, I wonder why this data looks this way. You know, if we can get more of our leaders to look at that and say, you know, why are we seeing this? You know, instead of saying, wow, somebody got hurt. You know, what can we do to fix it?
Well, let's pull the string on that, because that's something that's near and dear to my heart. Why is there such a lack of operational curiosity? I mean, why do you think that is?
I think people get overwhelmed with doing one more thing. And, you know, if you ask them to do one more thing, it's going to blow their mind. So I think what you have to do is provide that value proposition. If they see the value in it, they're going to do it. But I think that intellectual curiosity gets squelched with all the stuff that we have to do. You know, we're always in that reactionary. And, you know, you talked about that in one of your podcasts, that the type 2 versus 1. You know, we're always just in a reactionary mode. And it's like that in safety.
Yeah, that kind of in fast and slow thinking stuff is really interesting. But I guess, I mean, I completely agree with you. I guess I'm just flummoxed by the fact that it seems like curiosity is more of a personality trait. It doesn't seem like it would be a function of choice, more a function of just being curious. It shocks me that people know so little about their organizations.
I agree. And that's part of, you know, what I do is I try to give them a different view on their organizations, not just from filling out the checklists, but this predictive model stuff really gives people pause, you know. And if I talk to the C-suite and I say, well, we're using BI tools, you know, they get it. But you talk about business intelligence tools to many safety professionals and, you know, they look at you like, you know, you're selling them snake oil.
Business intelligence, is that an oxymoron? It's just a question. That's all it is.
Hey, I threw that out there. I knew you were going to bite.
Hey, it was super fun talking to you, man. You were the greatest.
Oh, no. You were the greatest. No. I appreciate everything that you're doing. And it really, the podcasts are like listening to friends just sitting around chatting. I really love how you're doing this and making it really personal.
It's pretty fun. I mean, I didn't think it would be this much fun. I don't really know what I thought, but it's fun. It was great talking.
So, are we going to start the podcast?
We just did it, man.
Well, I appreciate it. So, I'm going to be starting a podcast on safety analytics in the future. So, I'll hit you up, and we can have you on.
Absolutely, anything I can do, anytime, anywhere. Give me a call, and that's true. Anybody can call you, Chuck. You're the most accessible, most wonderful person. Keep it up, man.
Yeah, you too. Fight the good fight.
All right, I will talk to you later. Have fun.
Take care, my friend.
Thanks, Chuck. Bye-bye.
So there you have it. What do you think? Chuck Pettinger, Dr. Chuck, isn't he great? Predictive analytics, really, really interesting stuff. His organization is called Predictive Solutions. He's really Googleable. You can find him easy peasy. And I think he's super interesting. And I bet we hear more about things like big data collection for prediction for sure. I mean, lots of people are doing it in the world. I think we'll hear more about it in safety. This notion of wearables, trackable employees. You not only know where every employee is all the time, but you know what they're doing. That's a really, really interesting phenomena. And I think we'll talk more about it for sure. So thanks for tuning in. More importantly, thanks for subscribing. For some reason, that's really important. Hey, our numbers are looking good. Keep it up, you guys. It's way more fun to do this when people are listening. until then, stay tuned. Lots of big names coming up. So you'll be excited about that. I kind of alluded to one in this podcast earlier. Enough said on that. Until then, wish me luck on the road. I hope I see you in an airport lounge someplace. That would be fun. Have a great time. Keep learning. Have fun. And for goodness sakes, be safe.